News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Monday, August 13th. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Chirag Mahajan. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It is 5.05 p.m. and time for another full hour of independent news. Today we have special coverage of the 100th day of protest by the Musqueam First Nation in the Marple area of Vancouver. We'll be talking to fellow CITR member Spencer Lindsay, who was at the protest, and he will be giving us a rundown on what happened as well as sharing some of the interviews. Just to recap, those took place on August 10th at Granville Street and 70th Avenue.
All this plus your weekly health segment brought to you by our health team, Dietetics Intuition, and your weekday weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club right here on News 101, your source for independent news. And now we talk to Spencer Lindsay, who's in the studio with us. Hi, Spencer.
Hello. This is my third time on campus and or community radio in Vancouver today, so this is awesome.
You're just turning into a celebrity.
No.
But your heart lies here in CITR.
Oh, yes.
So we know that you were at the protests down in Marple on Friday, and you gave us a bit of background on Friday as well, but maybe just for our listeners who might have missed that, could you tell us a bit about what the protests are about and why it was significant that we're at day 100 right now?
Okay, well, I like to start out by saying when I was getting some audio clips, the first one I got, I asked my friend, how did you hear about this? And he was like, oh, I think I heard it. No, it was CITR. I heard a PSA about, I think that you guys put together from Mary Point. For those listeners that aren't, haven't heard about it, and basically back in the spring, Musqueam were notified that one body was uncovered from the Marple Midden, a.k.a. Cessnaum. It's an ancient burial ground and a former village site before Musqueam moved to their current location. And a developer wants to build a condo there, so they occupied the site to prevent any more work from happening and any more destruction of their ancestors. There is a cooling-off period, and then two more remains were actually uncovered when work resumed. So they started a permanent 24-hour occupation that has lasted 100 days. And so they had a community meeting, what should we do for our 100th day? So they decided to do a march from 70th and Granville down to the protest site. And then they invited speakers, politicians, community members to address the crowd and media. And I got to say, the media coverage following that day has been really good. People are kind of cluing into what the real reason behind the issues are. And we're going to play a bunch of clips today. Hopefully you'll get a sense of what's going on. So one of my interviews was with Cecilia Point, who her and her sister Mary have been really key players in engaging the community and keeping the occupation going. So I started out by kind of congratulating or answering some questions. So
awesome. So we're going to listen to that interview right now. Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons we're here on 100th day is because there's a lot more fight to go. But I would like to congratulate you on 100 days of occupation. And that's quite a feat for the community that puts a lot of stress on the community. How have you made it happen, and who do you have to thank for that?
I have to thank our elders, because as you said, it is hard to keep the community engaged, and there's some days when it's pretty thin down here, but our elders come every single day. I think about, you know, Delbert Guerin and Mervyn Point and Bob Guerin. They come every single day, and I don't know how they do it, but this is that important to them. They sent us down here when they discovered about the bodies, and we follow their example. So,
what have you learned, and what are you passing on from those nations that are coming?
Well, what I've learned from them is to participate with government doesn't work. The government has a duty to consult with First Nations, but it doesn't mean they have to do what we say, as you'll see with the pipeline when that starts coming. Sometimes they'll just have meetings with random members of nations, and then they'll tick that on their box, we consulted with the First Nation. So I heard the Minister of Aboriginal Relations say the other day that First Nations do not have veto power. And she said that in reference to the pipeline. But I mean, we have veto power. We have our own feet. We have our own bodies that we can stand in front of the government's actions and private companies' actions that we don't agree with. So what I've learned from other nations is that you have to resist that powerfully, because the government does not listen to what we're asking them to do.
What have you learned over the course of being here 100 days? What's changed, and what kind of lessons have you learned?
Well, I've learned a lot. I would have to say that I've met a lot of people. And so the kind of lessons I've learned are huge, because there's elders that sit here and tell us their stories. And I think we get so busy in life, in our jobs and our Blackberries and, you know, sitting in front of a computer or a TV all the time and not actually talking to people. So I'm going to try not to get emotional, but I have to say that, you know, I grew up away from this community. I grew up in Richmond. My father went to residential school, and he had a lot of hurts. He was a member of Squamish and Musqueam, and his parents separated, and he ended up going to residential school. And he never got the opportunity to tell me the stories. So since I've been here, so many of my uncles and my aunts have shared with me stories about my father. I never knew that he was a great speaker and a strong man. I mean, I knew he was funny, you know. We did know the family, but we really didn't connect with the family until we were older. And so we live in other cities around the Lower Mainland. One of my sisters lives on the island. We certainly see our aunts and uncles and our cousins here in Musqueam, but really not to the extent that we've seen them every single day. So we've learned so much about our culture and the stories from the past, like the dances and the songs that you see here and the Musqueam runners. Those are all thousands of years old, and you really feel it when you come here. I remember one time, the first time I went canoeing, and it wasn't even in a traditional way. I just got in a canoe and went out on the water with some friends. And oh my God, as soon as your oars hit that water, you can feel and hear the voices of your ancestors. And Deborah Sparrow told a really nice story here last night, just from a movie she watched, Amistad. And there was only two slaves left on this slave ship. And they said, we're the only ones. And one said to the other, no, we're not alone. We're going to reach back to our ancestors and bring them with us. And they're going to be with us. So I think I've gotten to know my ancestors too by being here, and I feel their strength. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So once again, that was Cecilia Point, interviewed by Spencer Lindsay, who we have here in our studio at the 100th day of protest by the Musqueam First Nation on Friday. So obviously Cecilia got a little bit emotional on that. She's very strong ties and being a really big leader in this community. Spencer, can you tell us a bit about who we're going to hear from next?
Are we going to do the crowds mm-hmm. next? Okay, well, my colleague Jennard O'Sullivan from Co-op Radio CJSF and the NCRA, she kind of went through the crowd to kind of gauge what people were thinking. So we hear from a really diverse set of voices here, and then it ends with a Musqueam elder kind of relating this journey, this march, to the history of Capilano, who is a really renowned warrior all over the area. He was renowned for defending Musqueam from northern invaders back in the early 1800s. And he says, you know, he marched down to Cessnam, you know, and that's what we just did. Because mm-hmm. as Cecilia just pointed out, they're getting strength through their ancestors. They're doing this not to own a piece of land. They're doing it to protect their ancestors. Mm-hmm. And like they keep on saying, I think the first person says it. If it happened at Mountain View Cemetery, it'd mm-hmm. be a totally different story. So mm-hmm. yeah, we're gonna hear from the crowd.
Violation. It's against the dignity of all human beings. And I mean, I read in the CBC this morning that they wanted to consider this ancient burial site and very well-established village site as a heap of refuse. And absolutely no one would consider calling Mountain View Cemetery a heap of refuse. And I'm appalled by that. And if you can't see that this is a violation of basic human rights and respect and dignity of people in Canada, and you're fooling yourself.
Do you think that the Musqueam people should be taking a walk on the bridge today?
That's up to Musqueam to decide. I'm here to support.
Good. Thank you.
We'll let her rip up there. We're here from Squamish Nation in support for our brothers and sisters, respect and honor of our loved ones' resting place.
Do you think that the Musqueam people should be taking a walk on the bridge today?
Yes, indeed. What better way to bring awareness? Tourists that travel here and they're going back to the airport, right? They should know what happens in the country that they're visiting.
What was the general feeling from the traffic? I noticed you were talking to people and trying to inform them.
I was, and the people were very receptive once they found out what we were doing. It's just, they just are as appalled as we are that there's human bodies there that are being desecrated and disrespected like that. People get it. People get that this is wrong and that this shouldn't be happening. And I don't understand why the province doesn't get it.
When we have a part of our people from Musqueam, they talk about the warrior, Payapalano, coming to Cessnam, and that's what you saw today. He came from Musqueam, and he came to the village of Cessnam, and he's saying, I am not afraid. I am a warrior of the Musqueam people, and that's what you just saw. That is our people, the Maya Musqueam. Hey!
My name is Harjinder.
I really have a great respect for the native people from all over the world, because we people belong to this land, and that's our right to protect our land. So whenever anywhere in the world any human rights violation or any something like a happen with the social justice, I am stand with all the people who deserve for that one. Thank you very much.
So once again, that was reactions from the crowd, and just a walkthrough of the crowd done by Gunarji at the Musqueam protests on Friday. So Spencer, obviously we heard from many different people in the crowd there. Can you tell us a bit about who was in the crowd and the kind of reception we've seen so far?
Well, I was happy to see quite a few politicians there, MLAs, former city councilors. I talked with an MP later. I think we're going to have a listen to that. There was a lot of people from UBC. I recognized four, five, six people from the longhouse there. Mm-hmm. There's people from different nations. The last speaker mentioned Kaiapalano, who I just talked about. Mm-hmm. He's a shared ancestor of a lot of the other groups around, like the Tsleil-Waututh. There are people from the island, all sorts of other nations. And a lot of other nations are looking to Musqueam. Mm-hmm. And some people are questioning the fact that Musqueam has to buy back this land that, you know, was theirs to begin with. But it's an interesting case. So
maybe could you go into a bit more about that? Because we know, obviously, that right now property developers have bought this land. But at the same time, if it is recognized that it is Musqueam land, what are the next steps? And how do they practically plan on getting the land back to the Musqueam?
Okay, well, to be clear, apparently they've owned that land for about 50 years. And you have to remember that 50, 60 years ago, it was in writing in Marpol that no Asiatic or something, no Asian, no Indian, no something else, no blacks could own land. I mean, so it's, you know, apparently there's been conflict sometimes. The developer's like daughter came with her partner, and they were yelling, and they were saying, "Why didn't you buy this like 50 years ago?" Mm-hmm. Well, not possible. So there, you know, there's a lot of history to deal with, and the regulations that say, that are the heritage act that's supposed to protect heritage, mm-hmm. has totally failed. What happened is the province issued permits to dig on this national historic site. It's been a national historic site since the 30s. And because they said it's been, you know, dug up so many times before that it's fine. Mm-hmm. But they keep on renewing those permits over and over and over again. And Musqueam's getting really frustrated because those should never have been issued in the first place. So I think you'll hear with a lot of the other media, and I'm sure in from these interviews, that people are really frustrated with the lack of engagement that the province has shown. Mary Polak, the Aboriginal minister, had a press conference the other day when, you know, word of the 100 day came out, and she basically reiterated the same thing. She said, "It's a complicated issue. It's private property. We're gonna, you know, expedite giving Musqueam these funds we already owe them so that they can buy the land back, but otherwise the province isn't committing to anything else." Some people have suggested that the province should be covering all those profit losses that the developer is losing by not being able to build right now, and apparently there's a lot of people pulling out of, you know, that bought condos, and they don't would want to live there now, right? Yeah. So I think the next step is really engaging with the province. And I think Day 100 did a lot to really spin public opinion the right way. So they're going to have to. Yeah.
Well, on that note, we do know that you engaged with a couple of politicians who were there. So maybe you can give us an intro into one of those interviews.
Okay, well, the first person I talked to, number five, was Jenny Kwan, and she's an MLA for Vancouver Mount Pleasant. She was also there with Scott Fraser, who is the Aboriginal critic, and I talked with her. It's a lot of singing kind of happening at the same time, so.
All right, we'll take a listen.
I'm here with Jenny Kwan down at the Tsleil-Waututh protest site. What are your thoughts on the protest today?
I thought it was very, very beautiful protest, bringing the communities together to show our support for the Musqueam people.
So Jenny, there's been a lot of frustration shown by Musqueam, especially in the latter part of this protest as we've reached day 100. The renewing of the permits, the provincial permits. What action can your caucus be taking, and what are your thoughts on those permits and why the province keeps renewing them when it's obvious that they should have never been given in the first place?
It is perplexing to me as to why the province is not finding solutions to resolve this matter. The Musqueam people has proposed several options, and one of which included a land swap, which the developer agreed to. So there are opportunities to resolve this. As to why the province refused to do that, I guess only the premier can answer that. I don't understand it myself. The opposition, the critic for Aboriginal relations, Scott Fraser, is here. We've visited the site on a number of occasions. Spencer Herbert has been here as well. We've raised the issue in the legislature and asked for the government to facilitate the land swap, to engage in this process, and we don't know why they're not doing that. So we'll continue to support the Musqueam people on their call. This is the 100th day, and it shouldn't continue. It shouldn't continue. Solutions are there. What it needs is good political will from the provincial government to sit at the table to resolve the matter. Different nations will use different tactics or strategies, if you will, to bring an end to dispute and disagreements. And the Musqueam people certainly are doing their part in their format. And I'm supportive of them. They're doing it in a very peaceful way. They're doing it in a way that says the goodwill is there. And as I said, the solution are viable. There is an opportunity to do a land swap. I don't know why the government's refusing to do that and really sit at the table to work with all of the parties to find a solution. I think, you know, at the end of the day, what are we talking about? We're talking about a historical site that's been recognized for many, many years. We're talking about a burial site of people who's died and buried. They should rest in peace, you know? And it's very basic and it's very fundamental. And those are the things that I think we can go back to and on that basis find a solution.
What do you think the federal government can do to help these negotiations happen smoothly for both parties?
Well, Canadians are Canadians, and so naturally we Canadians don't like the explanation that there's a problem, but it's not my jurisdiction to solve it. So I think the federal government in this situation could and should have taken a leadership role and just come forward and sat down with the various parties and said, look, we're gonna help find a good solution that everybody's satisfied with. This has gone on long enough. How can we help? Let's get it done. And that was the essence of my letter to the federal minister, that the time had come for the federal government to play a constructive role and help get a solution. A lot of willing parties, a lot of red tape and bureaucracy and jurisdictional finger pointing, and that's just not good enough. Well, it is very impressive, and it's just it shows the capacity of the community to really focus on and communicate something that's important to them and to all of us, actually. And I think the fact that there were community remains found on this site really elevated the urgency to get a resolution. And this has been I think the community's been very constructive in offering to be part of the solution and reaching out a hand so that the other levels of government and the property owners will also help get to that solution. So I've been impressed with the Musqueam First Nations action. Very impressed. Yeah, no, there's a lot of complex jurisdictional and cultural issues in communities across the country. And when a First Nation demonstrates this kind of sort of win-win approach, combined with warrior-like tenacity to get to a solution, I think that is useful for others to see the possibility of solving their dilemmas and concerns.
And beyond other First Nations, I think that's something all Canadians can learn about. I mean, there's so much of our history, especially, I mean, you live in Vancouver. We have a history of, you know, quick development. We're trying to be the next thing, and we often erase our heritage, and we don't really understand, you know, the importance of holding on.
I agree with you on that. We've seen that at a number of different levels, including some of the some of the tearing down of beautiful older homes that today we see a value in, but you know, maybe 30 years ago people thought were just an old house. So attitudes do change, and hopefully the attitude toward the importance of heritage like this the Marple Midden area for the Musqueam and for the community, that attitudes are changing on that as well. And that's why I'm confident that there will be a solution, and it will be a testament to this community, the Musqueam community, and what you've done.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
So you heard there Spencer Lindsay interviewing, first of all, Jenny Kwan, MLA for the area, and then talking to Joyce Murray, the MP. So obviously we've seen two levels of federal government, they're municipal and federal, but I think the one that's really being called on here is provincial. Were there any major steps the community took in reaching out to the provincial government there?
Well, at the end, we're going to have a listen to the runners who are delivering the petition to Christy Clark's office. And really, I think Day 100 was about grabbing the media's attention again. And, you know, their message has crystallized over the last 100 days. A lot has happened. There's some little steps going forward, but there's still some really frustrating roadblocks that could really use some provincial government action and leadership. So we just heard from a couple of the politicians who, you know, you could tell that they're not as briefed on what's been happening, and it's not their fault. The media really, well, I don't know. I mean, there hasn't been that much access to the true information. So I think the protest kind of changed that, but it let the community really let their message be heard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the next clip we're going to hear. It starts with the speaker, who's kind of the host, making a lot of speeches and introducing the other speakers. And then it goes into Cecilia, where she's really kind of telling the province what she thinks.
Just over here, where 70th turns into Marine Drive, there's a heritage house there. And they say it's over 100 years old. You know? A house. And we're just asking for help for our ancestors who are over 4,000 years old to take care of our ancestors. I'd like to thank everyone for your support and your encouraging words for the Musqueam people, for the Aboriginal people of Canada. Yeah, I mentioned before that it's just bestowed upon the Musqueam people that we were chosen to come forward, to be an example, to let the people know that we're not going to stop until we have taken care of our ancestors the proper way and the proper protocols. You know, there'll probably be many more nations coming up behind us throughout Canada. 100 days is 100 days too long to take care of our ancestors in the proper way that we know how as people of culture. So we'd like to thank everyone for your support once again. This time we have some speakers from the Musqueam Nation. We'd like to call forward Cecilia Point, one of our spokespersons, media spokespersons, and we'd like to thank you once again.
I thank all my friends and relations for coming from all over the province and from other nations around Canada. And like Alex said, what we're doing here is we hope will be an example to protect our burial site and our heritage site. Yesterday, the Minister of Aboriginal Relations had a press conference at Canada Place, and Rhiannon and myself and a few members went down to make our presence known that we're there. She had a big announcement to make. What's it going to be? Well, she just said the same thing over and over again. You know, it's as Rhiannon says, it's complicated. It's private property. So we never gave that property away. We never told anyone they can build on top of our burial site. So yes, we have this cash offer on the table, you know, we're waiting to see what they want. But the province still extends the development permits. This is why we're here. They're still allowed to go and dig there. So we're standing here, you know, for 100 days. So I actually challenged the Aboriginal minister yesterday, and I said, what a beautiful legacy it would be for this premier to leave us with, to protect all First Nations burial sites all over BC. So I asked her to take that message back to the premier, because the saddest thing that's happened is other nations from around the province has come down here and told us too. They're digging up our bodies too. It's happening to us too, and no one cares. Our bodies are in boxes. Our bodies are blowing down dams. Our bodies are ground up into asphalt. Who else would they do that to? They need to stop doing it. So I want her to leave that legacy for us. Protect First Nations burial sites. British Columbia is only 6% privately owned. The Crown holds most of this land, and it's ours. And they can't destroy our land without asking us. Come here, we have witnesses. We want you to know that we're putting our faith in you. Thank you very much for being here.
So there we heard from Cecilia Point addressing, largely it seemed like the provincial government to take some action there. Obviously the reception of that was pretty enthusiastic. People really seemed to get behind that. Just in your opinion, do you think this is something that we will see now that we've had Day 100 and increased media presence and so on?
Well, if you notice at the end of that clip, she kind of gets quieter because she turns away from, you know, where I was holding the mic. And that's because she was looking at Jenny Kwan and Scott Fraser and saying, the next government coming in, I'm challenging you to protect all of these sites. Because 6% of BC is, like she said, 6% is you know, privately owned. The rest is Crown. That's ours. We should be protecting it, right? So, yeah.
That's a nice gauntlet she threw down there. So yeah. We'll see what happens. So next, as you already mentioned before, we're going to hear from the runners. So can you tell us a bit about the significance of these runners?
Well, I don't know a lot. I don't know history, you know, I'm not an expert in Musqueam culture. But from what I heard, and you heard a bit in the first interview with Cecilia, during wartime, Musqueam would send runners to deliver messages. And it was faster than canoes. And you'll see, you know, if you walk around the reserves, you'll see these sculptures of runners and all the runners who ran from Cessnam up to Christy Clark's office. They're all wearing T-shirts with that image on it. So I guess the idea is they're following in their ancestors' footsteps. They're with their ancestors. Their ancestors are you know, with them to bring this message, right? It's not just them wanting to get this land. They're trying to protect their ancestors. So they ran in teams of three or four in about three vans. They had a full police escort all the way there. And so what you're going to hear is the speaker again kind of saying, let's do the runners now. And then you're going to hear former Musqueam chief Delbert Guerin. He's an elder who's been down at the site pretty much every day. I went down one day and played a couple games of crib with them. And he's just full of stories. And he mentions that, you know, Cessnaum, people moved away from Cessnaum. This is, I don't know exactly, but people moved from Cessnaum when I think the Ice Age, or the ice retreated, or something like that. And it's amazing. If you go down to any listeners, if you want to go down and show your support, bring down some food, go to a Sunday potluck there, just come during the day because sometimes it gets really thin during the day. If you go down, you'll hear some of these stories that that have been in generation the Musqueam people since the Ice Age. I mean, it's amazing. So, yeah, let's have a listen.
Okay.
At this time, you know, we'd like to start the running of the petition. So I'd like to thank everyone for your support once again. At this time, we'd like to call
Karen and Catherine Campbell
forward. They're going to start the running of the petition from here to Premier Clark's office. We're going to go there to the Premier's office and hand her the petition papers, all the signatures. Over 3,000 signatures on this petition. So I really hope that the Premier hears our calling through all these signatures that we've gathered up. We'd like to thank everyone that come forward and signed their name of support on this petition. They'll be handling the petition, and we're going to present it to Premier Clark. So we're going to start the relay now, and like to thank everyone for your support once again.
Thank you. We're proud to be protectors of SESTA.
Yeah,
song good.
On behalf of our Musqueam people, I want to present these signatures that we've received over the past 100 days of supporting us to protect our ancestors who came down here after this land was formed, after the Ice Age of 10,000 years ago, and those skeletons uncovered down there date back 4,400 years ago. So we feel very strongly that they have to be protected, and we wish that Christy Clark was here to receive this rather than having to depend on you to give it to her. But we thank you very much for being receptive to us.
Okay, thank you.
And we really appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you so much. I'll make sure this is delivered.
We always had a messenger running from village to village when we were in battle with the other nations. That's why we wanted to do this today, a message from that battle down at Cessnock. Like my Shaya said, this is history once again. Soon as we got ready at Safeway, my energy was just vibing away. Just because we delivered this message doesn't mean it's done. We still have more to go. Once again, I'd really like to thank each and every one of you for coming back to your roots. I'd also like to thank everybody that are non-Musqueam band members. Really means a lot. I'd like to thank the Vancouver Police Department for guiding our runners through this message. Here, really means a lot to us here as Musqueam people. Really like to thank you. Our hands are up to each and every one of you for being here with us today. Once again, I'd like to thank everybody once again. Hi, Dave.
Awesome. So just to recap, those were the runners from the Musqueam Day 100 protest. As recorded by Spencer Lindsay here at CITR. So just to wrap up, Spencer, what can people do if they do want to get interested? You already mentioned going down to the site, bringing some food, participating in potluck, but anything else?
Definitely check out Protect the Sacred Village of Cessnock, I think is the Facebook site, but look them up on Facebook and share with your friends those good news stories coming out, and share this podcast because really, like, I mean, this is an issue for all of us to get behind. I mean, wouldn't you rather, you know, I imagine, you know, when I have kids, like, I'd rather bring them down to the foot of the Arthur Lang Bridge for them to go to an interpretive history center where they can see these artifacts, they can hear the stories straight from Musqueam and learn about the history of this land. You know, Musqueam history is BC history. It teaches us so much about where we live and how it was formed and the, you know, the natural landscape and our relationship to it. You know, I'd much rather have that interpretive center than a condo. So I really encourage people to go down there. It just honking your horn when you go by and drive by makes everyone's spirits rise up a little bit. And it negates those people who are really against it. Like the guy, I was there and a guy came by with his air horn and blew it in my ear. Like, there's some opponents, but there's a lot more supporters. So whatever way you can, you know, just go down there and meet the community. That's what I'd say.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing.
Oh, sorry. You can also write letters to your elected officials. It's very, very important to do that as well. As citizens, I mean, we elect these people, so we really need to push the provincial government, and they listen. If they get enough letters, they're going to listen, and they're not going to be able to not do anything. So I'd really suggest doing that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today and for sharing what you know and what the community knows as well.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
212 Productions, Beat Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, The Kiss Store, Heart and Soul Clothing, Inc., Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
CITR and Discorder Magazine present Real Live Action as part of Magazine on Main 2012. Join us on Thursday, August 16th at the Western Front, located at 303 East 8th Avenue near Main Street, for an exhibition of photography featuring Discorder contributors from the past 12 issues. The event runs from 8:30 to 11 p.m. with live music and food. And be sure to check out more magazine events from August 16th to 18th all across Vancouver to support local writers, artists, and musicians. Day passes are only $10. For more information and to buy tickets, go to magsceneonmain.com.
And welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard from CITR correspondent Spencer Lindsay talking about the 100 days of protest at the Musqueam First Nation. And now we're going to be getting our weekly weather report from UBC Storm Club and Phil Chang. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me. Good evening, listeners. In the coming week, the sky is anticipated to be clear on most days, minus some scattered clouds tonight and some cloud cover tomorrow morning. Good news for the protest at Arthur Lang Bridge. The GFS is suggesting that there may be some rainfall off the coast of the BC tonight, so we may get some drops here in Vancouver, which could cause some overnight fog, but it shouldn't last more than a few hours. Great. Now here's your weather summary for this coming week. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 50. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud, high of 24, UV index of 7 or higher. Tuesday night, a few clouds, low of 17. On Wednesday, we are anticipating sunny, high of 26, 31 inland. Thursday, also sunny, low of 16, high of 26, 31 inland. Friday as well, sunny, low of 17, high of 26, 31 inland. Okay, so that's your weather summary for the next 5 days, brought to you by Environment Canada. Reporting for News 101, I'm Phil Chang. I'm from the UBC Storm Club.
Thanks, Phil. Great to have you on, as always, and hear wonderful reports for the end days of summer here. Good to hear that we've got some nice weather coming in our way.
All right. Thank you. And we now go to our health segment, August 13th. And this is by our health team, Dietetics Intuition.
Your weekly health beat on CITR 101.9 FM.
It's Dietetic Intuition, your source for precise nutrition advice.
What are you going to hear? We'll bust nutrition myths, give tips, do book reviews, as well as interviews, you name it. And now here are your dietetic students, Andrea, Jessica, and Sharon, for this week's segment. Hi, Vancouver. This is Andrea and Jess here from Dietetics Intuition. Thanks so much for tuning in again on such a beautiful summer day. We're really excited to be talking about today's segment. We're talking about sports nutrition today. The Summer 2012 Olympics in London just finished up yesterday, and the Vancouver Marathon was going on Saturday morning. So that inspired us to get into tip-top shape, and we hope that it's inspired you as well, Vancouver. So sports nutrition is definitely a complex topic. There are two different types of athletes usually, endurance athletes and strength athletes, and it's just too much to cover in one day. So we're just going to be talking about eating for endurance athletes today, and you can tune in next week to hear us talk about what strength athletes should be eating. So, going on to endurance athletes, what type of diet should they be following? So, according to RD411, which is a reputable nutrition web resource written by RDs, the main goal is to keep up your body's source of fuel throughout your exercise, through what you eat before, during, and after exercise. Now, we're going to talk about the three major types of way you can get energy. So, carbohydrates, proteins, and fat. Starting off with carbohydrates. Hitting the wall is a term that's used to describe what happens after your muscles literally run out of fuel or muscle glycogen. This usually occurs around mile 20, which is kind of funny, seeing that your body can store only about 2,000 calories worth of carbohydrate as glycogen. So, you know, if you need something to remember, 2,000 calories worth of carbohydrate will only get you to mile 20. This is why it's so important. Carbohydrate is your main source of energy, so you need to make sure you get enough of it in your diet before, during, and after exercise. So if you're looking at your diet, 55 to 60% of total calories is what you should be aiming for. Usually you try and get that high of an amount because it spares protein, and you want to spare protein because protein is used to build muscle, and so if you can use protein to build muscle, you want to use carbohydrate as your main source of energy. Now, the type of carbohydrate you're eating is quite important as well, so you want to emphasize complex carbohydrates, and those are whole grains, breads, cereals, beans, pasta, and potatoes in your general diet. Now, just make sure that while you're eating all these good, yummy, starchy things, you make sure you have a diet still high in fiber. This is important because it helps keep you regular, and it can help prevent high cholesterol and other health-related diseases like that. Now, I want to talk to you about simple sugars. Now, simple sugars definitely have gotten a bad rep in the media lately because of all its implications for diabetes and for tooth decay and other such things. But in some circumstances, eating simple sugars can actually be a good thing. And when you're talking about endurance exercises, it can be a good thing. Now, simple sugars such as fruits, juices, sugars, syrups, and honey can provide quick energy. So if you're feeling an energy crash when you finish exercising, you can just pop something sweet into your mouth, and that is a good way to begin replacing glycogen stores immediately, and those are faster than eating complex carbohydrates. So moving on to protein. Protein is a great way to repair exercise-induced muscle damage because it helps support gains in lean tissue mass. It's not generally a main energy source like I mentioned before, such as carbohydrates, but it does provide a small amount of energy during exercise. Now, if you're looking at your total diet, it should provide about 12 to 15% of your total calories. Now, that may seem like a lot, and you may feel like you have to eat a lot more protein to compensate, especially if you're exercising quite a bit, but it's actually been proven by many studies that the typical diet of most athletes provide more than enough protein to cover the increased amounts that you may need. So if you're just eating a variety of foods from the Canada's Food Guide, then you should be getting more than enough protein than you need. Moving on to fat. Fat provides energy, essential elements of cell membranes, and fat-soluble nutrients such as vitamins A, D, and E, and is absolutely an important part of an athlete's diet. Athletes should consume about 20 to 30% of total calories as fat. Too high or too low can have negative effects on your blood lipid profile, such as raising your cholesterol or your triglycerides. However, fat is an important source of energy during certain stages of exercise, particularly towards the middle or end stages of exercise after you've exhausted your muscle glycogen stores. So just make sure that you have enough fat, because regular training can improve your body's ability to use that fat as a resource and can help keep glycogen levels up, and in doing so, improve your performance. So I'll just pass it on to Jess, and Jess will be talking to you about how you can keep yourself hydrated and some practical tips on how to pull all of this together.
Alrighty, thanks, Andrea. So fluid is pretty much one of my most favorite things to talk about. It's really important to stay hydrated for peak performance. Dehydration occurs when fluid losses exceed fluid intake. So it's going to make you feel chilly, dizzy, disoriented, and interestingly, lack of fluid impairs carbohydrate absorption. So to prevent dehydration, you should drink early and often every day, and don't wait until you get thirsty. But don't drink too much. Hyponatremia, or low sodium in the blood, occurs when an athlete loses a lot of sodium through sweat but consumes a lot of plain water. So what should your hydration plan look like? So during exercise, water is all you need for events that last less than an hour. But beverages containing carbohydrate and sodium are recommended during exercises that last longer than an hour. So sports drinks, which contain about 7% carbohydrate, are actually the optimal concentration for exercise events lasting longer than an hour. So guidelines for staying adequately hydrated before, during, and after racing. Before the event, about 2 cups of cold fluid, about 2 hours before. For 15 minutes before the event, another 2 cups. And during event, every 15 to 20 minutes or so, you're going to take in about 1/2 cup to 3/4 cup, just little bits in little increments to ensure that you don't feel bloated or weighed down. After the event, 2 cups of fluid for every pound of water lost. To find out how much water you lost, you can weigh yourself before the event, weigh yourself after the event, and take note of what you drank during the event. So before, during, and after exercise, let's put this all together here. So experiment with new foods and or beverages on training days only. Don't try anything new on race days. The pre-exercise meal plan helps prevent hunger and maximizes glycogen stores. So eat about 2 to 4 hours before exercise and eat familiar carbohydrate-rich foods that are low in fat and fiber before races to avoid intestinal distress. So like Andrew said, you've got to include fiber, but not right before the event. Substitute frequent snacks and fluids for full meals if that makes you feel more comfortable rather than one large meal. Some examples of pre-exercise breakfast can include a bagel with a little bit of peanut butter and sliced banana, some cereal topped with sliced banana or non-fat or low-fat milk, or a pancake or waffle topped with low-fat or yogurt or fresh fruit. And for exercises lasting longer than an hour, you need to consume about 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrate per hour. So this is approximately a granola bar or maybe even half a power bar. That can extend the endurance performance by preventing glycogen depletion. Also helping in this, sports drinks, because sugar is carbohydrate, gel and water, and again, sports bars and water. So avoid fructose-only products or fruit alcohol products immediately before and during the exercise. These may lead to diarrhea. So consuming carbohydrate-rich beverages and or foods within 15 minutes of completing the exercise or event is particularly important if you'll be engaging in more intense or long training sessions or another event within the next 24 hours. So eat a snack or a meal within 2 hours of completing your first bout of exercise or in between bouts that is high in carbohydrate, moderate in protein, and low fat. So examples include some low-fat granola and an orange, or a turkey and cheese sandwich, or pretzels, or an apple, pasta with a lean sauce, lean meat sauce, and a tossed salad with a vinaigrette, for example. So a diet that's balanced and that includes carbohydrate-rich foods all the time will promote glycogen storage between workouts so you have enough energy to go through the next workout or event. So the take-home message for you today is combine whole grains, protein-rich foods, and vegetables and or fruit at each meal and snack to help prevent large fluctuations in blood glucose, control appetite, and eat a balanced diet including enough fluid to stay hydrated and energized.
Thanks for tuning in again this week.
If you missed us, please go to blogs.ubc.ca/dietetics intuition or follow us on Twitter at CITR Health and even like us on Facebook at Dietetics Intuition.